Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, October 8th. I'm Gabriel Zucker, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, College of the Redwoods Multilingual Literary Journal Personas accepting submissions. There will be beers and bears at the zoo this weekend. Local youth theater program Recycled Youth put on new show going viral. Stay tuned. Those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
College of the Redwoods Literary Journal Personas is accepting submissions starting this month till March 16th. Nat Cardos reports.
On October 1st, submissions opened for College of the Redwoods' fourth issue of its multilingual literary journal, Personas. The Creative Writing Literary Journal consists of original poetry, fiction, creative nonfiction, essays, and art that consider the experience of multilingualism as determined by the author. KMUD News spoke with Jonathan Maiulo, Student Development Advisor for Adult and Community Education Programs at College of the Redwoods, for more information on what the publication is.
So Personas started a few years back. It's actually in its fourth year now. It is a multilingual-focused creative writing journal. So College of the Redwoods had a creative writing journal previously, and it still does, which was Seven Gill Shark. And I was working on that when I was in the English faculty. And then after changing positions and also just considering the wealth of writing that I was receiving from students with different linguistic backgrounds, I thought, like, hey, wouldn't it be great to sort of allow those students, you know, give those students an opportunity rather to communicate with a larger community through their writing, a similar creative writing journal, but one that has this focus on multilingual experiences in writing. And so that's where it was born from.
The publication focuses on the experience of multilingualism and celebrates the skill. However, authors do not need to be multilingual to contribute. Writings may be multilingual, bilingual, or monolingual, and submissions are accepted from all community members, as well as staff, faculty, and students of College of the Redwoods. Here's Maiulo with more about the publication's focus on multilingualism.
Totally. So there's that perception, right? Like, that's a big part of it, is that people perceive this county to be Humboldt County, in the far north of California, to be very monolingual, which it isn't necessarily, right? I mean, over 10% of respondents to the survey, I think, that may have been part of the census, I don't know, but I've seen this number before, that is something like over 10% speak a language other than English in the home. And different languages give us such a varied means of expression, right? Like, there are sayings in other languages that, you know, we all know that they're untranslatable, but it also gives value to the skill of being able to speak more than one language too. That's a big part of it in a place that's perceived as being primarily monolingual, is that people think, you know, when they hear an accent, that there's something that needs to be remedied or corrected there, rather than it being the hallmark of an incredible gift and ability. So, you know, by showing, you know, the community that we have this creative force, you know, we continue the conversation around it and give fodder to the conversation of the value of multilingualism, and sort of keep it on everybody's radar too, that this is something that this community is proud of, and this is something that this community does, and it is a valuable thing to do. Not to mention, to give students that are working on writings, you know, that might not feel like they fit in a traditional academic situation, you know, they have an outlet that way for their writings, where they can perceive of a larger audience, which is always an issue for, you know, somebody who teaches writing, is that you find that your students, they don't really perceive of anybody outside the instructor as being the person that they're writing to. And, you know, of course, your task is to get them to think of who else they could be writing to, and then to write toward that larger audience. So it's also valuable for that. I've had a lot of instructors tell me it's very helpful too.
The force behind this publication is CR's Multilingual Club, which encourages students to learn new languages and celebrate the skill of speaking more than one. The club also will be hosting a Spanish and English language exchange on October 23rd in Eureka. Maiulo explains more about the club and the event.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to mention, too, that with the consideration of giving value to multiple languages and to the ability to speak them and to those who are getting to that point, too, because, you know, not everybody feels like they're fluent in another language, right, or even, you know, they have an understanding of it. That's certainly fine to submit work of that nature, too. You know, define the language however you like. You know, somebody could write, say, about, like, the language of love. We had somebody write about ASL, American Sign Language, and that experience. So, you know, those are certainly all legitimate ways of looking at this as well. And then I also wanted to mention that the Multilingual Club is the force behind Personas is also going to be putting on a Spanish and English language exchange. So an opportunity for first language speakers of both of those languages, so first language Spanish speakers and first language English speakers, to have an opportunity to mutually benefit from each other. So at the Downtown Eureka site, we have a lot of students who are taking English as a language classes, and they're, you know, often considering themselves to be, you know, students of the language of English, and yet we have so many in our community that would like to learn Spanish or improve their Spanish, and those students, of course, could be great tutors and conversation partners. So the scheme of it is that they'll be able to speak Spanish for 15 minutes to each other, and then they'll switch and they'll speak English for 15 minutes to each other with, you know, a little bit of help if they need it at any place, and just get comfortable using the language, because anybody familiar with language acquisition can tell you that you need to use the language to get comfortable with it, to come to feel like you actually are able to speak it, right? So that'll be October 23rd at 4:30 at 527 D Street in Eureka.
Fiction, creative nonfiction, and essay submissions are limited to one submission per author and a length of no more than 2,000 words. Poetry submissions are limited to 3 poems per author and should be under 2 pages in length, as well as be submitted in the format that the author wishes to have them printed, including English translations if necessary. Art submissions of any medium can be submitted in any format, and all will be considered for the cover. Submissions in multiple genres are permitted, but must be submitted separately.
So to submit, you can email, probably the easiest way, your submission to my email. It's jonathan-myulo@redwoods.edu, jonathan-m as in Mary, A as in apple, I as in ice cream, U as in umbrella, L as in lemon, O as in orange. So again, jonathan-myulo@redwoods.edu. You can also call 707-476-4527 with any questions about submissions. And finally, you could even mail them or drop them off at 527 D as in David Street in Eureka.
Submissions for Personas will be open until March 16th, 2026, and a free public reading event will follow the release of the print edition of the journal at the Morris Graves Museum of Art in Eureka on Saturday, May 16th, 2026. For more information, the website is redwoods.edu/academics/personas.php. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.
Humboldt County's best brewers will be at the zoo this weekend, showcasing their best brews during a fundraising event for California's littlest animal park. Sigur Bjorn has more.
This weekend, you'll have an opportunity to get acquainted with beers and bears in equal measure at the zoo. Here is Kate Baldwin, who works in communications and development for the Sequoia Park Zoo, explaining.
So Oktoberfest is coming up this Saturday on October 11th from 4 to 7 p.m. right here at the Sequoia Park Zoo. This is going to be a celebration of bears and brews. Lots of our local breweries coming to visit us and pour. We've got Humboldt Cider Company, Lost Coast Brewing Company, Pascenta Mad River, Six Rivers, Redwood Curtain, Eel River, Seaquake, and the Humboldt Homebrewers, which are part of the Inc. people.
The fundraising event will give attendees the chance to peek behind the scenes at the zoo, hear from zookeepers and scientists, while sampling some of the best beers and ciders Humboldt County brewers have to offer.
As we kick off the harvest season here locally, well, you might notice that a lot of our local wildlife are also experiencing kind of a seasonal change as our orchards ripen and fruit trees ripen. Lots of local wildlife will be seeking out those opportunities to kind of pack on the extra calories before winter. So that's called hyperphagia. Animals like bears and raccoons and other wildlife go through that. So we're really going to highlight that kind of biological imperative to kind of get hungry and pack on that weight before the potential scarcity of winter.
Guests will have the opportunity to do their own hyperphaging during the event by sampling the offerings of local food vendors.
We do have food vendors, our Evergreen Eatery here at the zoo. We also have Fry Bread Love coming, Cook's Barbecue, and Guatemalan Yum Yums joining us. So food and drinks will be available for purchase. We do have a variety of beer and cider, as well as non-alcoholic beverages for anyone who wants to join us, but maybe is choosing not to drink.
During the event, arborist Scott Baker and zoo director Jim Campbell-Spickler will be climbing to the top of Humboldt's tallest living Christmas tree, measuring its height and taking samples to determine its age.
We're really excited to be hosting some special keeper talks and kind of animal encounters opportunities during Oktoberfest. We are having an otter feeding. Of course, our river otters are such a delight and always fun to watch get their meals. We are going to have a special bear, of course, it being Oktoberfest, a special bear keeper talk, and our zookeepers are working on something really special. I don't want it to give it away, but they're working on something really special for any of our guests that are joining us. We are also going to have an owl encounter. So one of our owls will be coming out to join us and meet guests with her zookeeper, Natalie. Hopefully, if all goes according to plan, there's a small chance our brand new porcupine, Ozzy, will have made his way out to his new exhibit, to his new habitat, and we'll be able to see him as well.
The event runs from 4 to 7 p.m. this Saturday, the 11th. Tickets are $25 and tokens for the aforementioned drinks and food from local brewers and vendors will be available for purchase. The event is a fundraiser for the zoo, and Baldwin shared with us what the funds will be used for.
So this fundraiser is benefiting conservation and animal programs here at the zoo. One of our big animal funds that we constantly have to kind of replenish is our Animal Enrichment Fund, which in short, that's toys for the animals. So they always need new toys or always looking to buy new things. So fundraisers like this is one of the ways in which we can kind of ensure that we're always staying on top of the needs of the animals and those fun things that we like to get for them.
That was Kate Baldwin from the Sequoia Park Zoo in Eureka. My name is Sigurd Bjørn, reporting for KMUD.
On October 17th, 18th, and 19th, Southern Humboldt's after-school youth theater program Recycled Youth is to perform a new original show, Julian Jackson Reports.
Recycled Youth, the free-to-attend and only consistent after-school performing arts program for youth in Southern Humboldt, is putting on another original show, Going Viral, on the weekend of October 17th at the Redwood Playhouse, 7 p.m. on Friday and Saturday, with a 2 p.m. Sunday matinee. For more initial information about the show and participating in it, I spoke with some of the members.
So, my name's Tess, and I've been doing Recycled Youth for about 1 month now, and my favorite thing about it is I get to meet new people because I just moved here. So, yeah.
My name's Charlie McKee. I've been doing Recycled Youth for about 2 years, and the thing I like most about this program is just having freedom of expression and having an opportunity to act. You know, Recycled Youth is definitely great to meet other aspiring actors and people just to, you know, hang out with, make new friends. It's just a great program altogether.
Hello, my name is Lydia McGuire, and this is my first show in Recycled Youth. I think one of my favorite aspects of Recycled Youth, it's just being able to, like, definitely show who you really are and just be the most extravagant you can be and just meet new people and connect and make a better community out of it.
My name is Zaya. I've been doing Recycled Youth for 2 years, and my favorite thing about the program this year is probably the fact that I get to meet new people. I enjoy the show coming along. We had a bit of trouble earlier in the year. Some people left. So there was a possibility that it wouldn't happen, but it's going to happen now. And I'm excited for what the outcome's going to be.
Hi, K-Mud. My name is Hannah. I've been doing Recycled Youth for 3.5 years. And my favorite thing about the Recycled Youth program is that this season that I get to do a new role that I haven't really done before, kind of a more hyper role than I usually have played in the past. I think that I'm particularly enjoying the newcomers that came and went. Previously in the year, we had a problem with some actors and actresses leaving for the first kind of half of the season, which kind of put a dent in our progress. However, the people who stayed really put in the effort, and I enjoy watching new people act.
Zaya and Hannah also shared the central message or theme for the show.
People are on their phones too much, and that we need to reconnect with real life.
My friend here, Zaya, explained it pretty well, but also the message of the show is that we need to view the world in a different viewpoint than just social media and technology. There's a lot more to enjoy in the world than just somebody else's life or your own life that you're incapacitated with. But I think it's really important to get off your technology and your phones to stay connected with the world.
For more additional information, I spoke with one of the directors.
Hi, I'm Jessie Lee, and I'm the music director for Recycled Youth. And this program, the Recycled Youth program, is free and after-school program for our teens, 12 to 18, in Southern Humboldt. And I believe this program is vital to our community because it supports our youth. And the youth write the show, and they tend to pick topics that are important to them and also to the rest of the community. It's been a longstanding program that's been going on for, 30 plus years. So a solid legacy program. We like to keep it going, and I love being a part of it. I love seeing the kids, the teens, mature as they go through the program and develop their skills. This production is about phones. They can expect some singing, some dancing, some aerials, some phones, and some mysteries of the underground. Oh, we have a GoFundMe page. You can look up Recycled Youth Humboldt and go on GoFundMe. And besides going to our shows, I think that's pretty much it. Donate to the program. It's free to the teens that are in the program. So most of our financial support is grant funding and fundraising. So yeah, please donate to Recycled Youth.
To experience and support the program in person, you can go see the production Going Viral at the Redwood Playhouse in Garberville at 7 p.m. on the 17th and 18th, with a 2 p.m. matinee on the 19th. For more information, visit the Recycled Youth Humboldt Facebook page. I've been Julian Jackson, reporting for KMUD News.
Turning to Mendocino, SCOTUS denies a petition for Mendocino Railway. Mendo Local News' Elise Cox reports.
The long-running legal battle over the former Georgia Pacific mill site in Fort Bragg took another turn this week when the United States Supreme Court declined to hear an appeal from Mendocino Railway, operator of the beloved Skunk Train. I'm Elise Cox, reporting for KMUD News and MendoLocal.news. The Supreme Court denial leaves in place a federal court ruling that dismissed the railroad's lawsuit against the city of Fort Bragg and the California Coastal Commission. Mendocino Railway has consistently argued that state and local regulations do not apply to it. It maintains that it falls within the exclusive jurisdiction of the Surface Transportation Board, an independent federal agency that regulates railroads nationwide. The Supreme Court denial does little to settle the issue, especially in light of a decision by the Surface Transportation Board last month. The board affirmed that Mendocino Railway, along with all inactive railroads, are common carriers, and that their railroad operations, to the extent they have any, fall under the board's jurisdiction. Robert Pinoli, president and CEO of Mendocino Railway, said he was disappointed that the Supreme Court declined to review the dismissal of the company's federal suit.
I think it's important to point out that it's, you know, the issue in the petition was wonky, and it was a procedural one. Frankly, it was to clean up a lot of the lower court's previous decisions on preemption. And the question before the court was whether the federal courts improperly refused to hear our federal preemption claim in deference to state court. And so, you know, what they did is they essentially sent it back, let the state court deal with it. And if the state courts, for whatever reason, don't get it right, then we will bring it back through the federal process again.
Pinoli pointed to the Surface Transportation Board decision, which said that even though the skunk train hasn't carried freight in years, it never lost its legal status as a carrier. The Surface Transportation Board decision was seen as a victory for small and regional railroads across the country. The American Short Line and Regional Railroad Association had warned that a different outcome could threaten dozens of other lines that operate with limited freight or passenger service. In contrast, the California Coastal Commission had urged the board to deny Mendocino Railroad's petition. The commission argued that Mendocino Railway has been functionally inactive for decades. Its only connection to the National Rail Network has been severed for more than 25 years. The Surface Transportation Board disagreed. It wrote that, quote, a rail carrier does not lose its status by not providing freight service. It said that the company's, quote, common carrier obligation cannot be terminated without federal authorization. The Surface Transportation Board's decision settles a significant point of contention in the railroad's battle with the city and the Coastal Commission.
There has been certainly some question by folks within the city of Fort Bragg and the California Coastal Commission if Mendocino Railway is an STB-regulated and recognized railroad. This certainly clarifies, you know, what is called a notice of exemption, which is essentially a railroad's license to operate that was issued in 2004.
However, the key issue remains of whether Mendocino Railway is a public utility. Fort Bragg City Manager Isaac Whitby said the ruling provides clarity on the path forward and that he's encouraged by the Supreme Court's decision to leave the case in state hands.
The city of Fort Bragg certainly respects the Supreme Court's decision to deny Mendocino Rail's petition. This ruling provides further clarity on the path forward. And as we've consistently emphasized the last year, that the city remains committed to working in good faith with Mendocino Rail to resolve outstanding issues and to facilitate the responsible redevelopment of the mill site in a way that serves the best interests of our community.
The parties are working together on a master development agreement, and they are in settlement talks. If those fail, the dispute is headed for a jury trial this spring. For KMUD News and MendoLocal.News, I'm Elise Cox.
In state news, California community health workers reach out as immigration raids continue. Public News Services' Susan Potter reports.
Community health workers, promotores, and representatives are reaching out to Medi-Cal beneficiaries across the state, including immigrants. As confusion and fear spread about immigration raids, they're working to provide comfort and information on health care rights. According to CalMatters, immigration agents are showing up at medical facilities more often, reversing a past policy of avoiding sensitive areas. Lourdes Bernice Quinto is a promotora with Pasa la Voz, a program with the Latino Coalition for a Healthy California, speaking here through Coalition Translator Mar Velez.
The community health worker promotora is born of the community, so they have direct connections and often share the same lived experiences. They understand exactly what they're going through right now.
ICE has long had the right to access public spaces in medical facilities. The Trump administration says this access is needed to enforce immigration laws. But Governor Gavin Newsom recently signed Senate Bill 81, which prohibits a healthcare provider from granting immigration agents access to non-public areas of the facility without a judicial warrant or court order. It also clarifies that immigration status collected by a healthcare facility is private, protected information. Mar Velez with the Latino Coalition for a Healthy California says people need to be able to feel safe while getting health care.
SB 81 offers not just protection, but guidance so that everyone, no matter what your color of your skin is, no matter what your immigration status is, can safely continue to access health services because health is a human right.
Carrie Sanders is Senior Policy Director for the California Pan-Ethnic Health Network.
Community health workers, promotoras, representatives are helping to fill those gaps, providing updated information on people's healthcare rights to see the doctor, to help manage their conditions when they may be too scared to visit a doctor's office or to go into an emergency room.
Undocumented immigrant adults are eligible for Medi-Cal coverage, but due to budget constraints, new enrollments will be frozen on January 1st. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Arizona's 22 tribes rely on federal dollars to fund programs and even to pay some employees. But as KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, two Valley-based tribal communities say the ongoing government shutdown should have limited effect.
Governor Stephen Rowe Lewis of the Gila River Indian Community shared in a video message that his administration has been crafting a contingency plan to fund essential services for up to 90 days. The longest shutdown was during President Trump's first term and lasted 35 days.
So our plan should more than cover a shutdown, but we will also have plans in place should a longer, unprecedented shutdown occur. And I also want to assure you that we don't anticipate any interruption in any of our community programs at this time.
That optimism was echoed in prepared remarks by Martin Javier, president of the neighboring Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian community.
While this may cause some disruption, I want to reassure you that our tribal departments remain fully operational and staff are committed to delivering the services you count on every day.
Nearly 31,000 employees have been furloughed by the Interior Department, including more than a third of all Bureau of Indian Affairs staff. The National Congress of American Indians has even created a survey urging tribes across Indian country to share their experiences on how the current shutdown is impacting them. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
A new pitch competition is looking for indigenous entrepreneurs in Michigan who have ideas for startups. IPR's Claire Keenan-Kurgan has more.
IndigiPitch will give Native Americans in Michigan a chance to compete for cash prizes to get a startup off the ground. Shiloh Slumsky is the financial officer and tribal liaison for 20 Fathoms, a Traverse City-based group that's organizing the competition. She says Michigan's indigenous communities are full of creative business ideas.
You know, we're taught to not waste anything and to utilize everything that we take. And in order to utilize everything we take, it really takes an innovative mindset to be able to do that.
Slumsky is looking for applications from Native Americans in Michigan who have startup ideas and from Native small business owners who want to have a vendor booth at the event. It's on December 5th at the Ottawa Casino in Petoskey. Applications are open until October 13th. For National Native News, I'm Claire Keenan-Kurgan.
Chickasaw Nation Governor Bill Anitubby says the Chickasaw Nation is strong as he delivered the State of the Nation address.
Fellow Chickasaws, I'm honored to report to you today that the state of the Chickasaw Nation is remarkably strong and the best is yet to come.
He gave the speech during the Oklahoma Tribe's annual meeting and festival. Anitubby highlighted a number of tribal issues, including its diverse business portfolio, which he says continues to expand. He also touched on expanding education, healthcare, and other programs, Anatubby talked about the importance of collaboration, including for public safety and infrastructure projects.
By continuing government-to-government relations with local, tribal, state, and federal partners, and cultivating partnerships with agencies, institutions, and many other organizations, we assure mutual growth and vitality for the Chickasaw Nation and the communities throughout Oklahoma.
Anatubby emphasized the tribe's commitment to language and cultural preservation. The address was followed by a parade and activities, which are part of the week-long festival. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley. And thanks to our reporters, Nat Cardos, Sigor Bjorn, Julian Jackson, Suzanne Potter, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have any questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Are you passionate about your community, looking to report what's happening around Mendocino? KMUD News is looking for stringer reporters from the Mendocino area to cover local Mendocino stories that matter. Whether you're a seasoned journalist or just eager to learn, we'll help you get started. You'll get training, support, and a chance to amplify real voices from your community. If you're interested, email news@kmud.org for more information. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Gabriel Zipper.